Hey, awesome nerds, and welcome to another episode of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch television shows you really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in your role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Talaman, and joining me is my co-host, Danny Calamari, who's just finished riding the Unagi, and that's not a sex thing.
No, it's not a sex thing, but I wasn't. I'm not going to finish that, actually. Don't worry.
There's so many things. I never really thought that riding the Unagi could be a euphemism. And then I was just watching the episode. I'm like, that's a big eel. That's kind of slippery and weird. Anyway, we are talking about episode four of book one of Avatar: The Last Airbender, the 2005 classic animated series, The Warriors of Kyoshi, where the gang arrives at Kyoshi Island and are captured by some Kyoshi warriors. When Aang reveals that he is the Avatar, news quickly spreads out and suddenly reaches to Prince Zuko, who then goes to Kyoshi Island to capture him, I assume. The thing's cut off after that. I'm just going to assume it says him after that. That's a lot of text for they go to an island. Aang's popular. Zuko comes. There. It's a good. I like this episode. This
It
is one of my
is,
favorites.
yeah. It's
Yeah.
ve a very like kind of like your basic, classic adventure thing of group goes to an island, does the thing, leaves the island. But it's like it obviously like being this show is so much more than that as well. But it is a very enjoyable episode.
It felt last week we were talking about like kids animation or classic kids cartoons. This the setup for that felt like the kids cartoon where they were going to learn a very 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 valuable lesson by the end of the show. And one of them did. Well, actually two of them did, but the lesson they learned isn't what you're expecting. It's like I feel like this was a with great power comes great responsibility episode. Like that actually, yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. It's great
Yeah,
power comes
kind of,
great
isn't it?
responsibility. Yeah, that Aang's all like, hey, look, I'm the Avatar and everyone loves me and this is really cool. And then he realizes the downside to being the Avatar, and that's that wherever you go, you're going to be hunted, and the people that take you in are going to be persecuted, and they're going to have their houses burned down. So, yeah, you got to have that responsibility. You can't just be all, I'm the Avatar.
Meanwhile,
Deal with it.
Sokka's just trying to learn about how like women are equal and trying to
Yeah, women are
grasp that
people too,
concept.
Sokka.
Women are people too.
I love that storyline. Like this whole, and this is not so much spoilers, but when Suki returns, like much later down the line, like I guess I'm a Sokka Suki shipper, because I was on board with this from the start. Like I love them together. It's fun. Like she calls him on the bullshit very early on,
No,
and
I do really
yeah.
love them together. Like I love their dynamic there. And yeah, in just the ways that she helps like evolve his character.
It felt a little bit like, okay, if this is a role-playing game, Sokka's player has decided he's going to have one gimmick. Like, this is the gimmick he's got. He's going to be a bit sexist. So he's been making jokes at the table and like pointing these things out, and he very quickly got, or he or she very got, quickly got bored with it. Like, it's not fun anymore. I thought it was going to be a little bit funner. I'm just going to stop. And rather than just stopping it, there's a narrative and a character growth explanation of why it stops.
Yeah, it's
And
good.
yeah, I really love that idea because it's not just, oh, he got, sh like we see this with Sokka gets beaten up twice by the Kyoshi warriors, this band of kick-ass ninja women. And the second time it could have just been, ha ha, he got shown up. But then he comes and he apologizes. Like that's, and not just apologize, he's like, no, I was wrong. Like a proper apology, not just, I guess I've learned my lesson, a proper apology, and then learns how they fight so he can be better.
It's like a lot of like kid shows, they do that thing where the person gets showed up and, like, they might get knocked over or something, and then everyone laughs and, like, rub their head. They're like, oh, and then that's kind of it. Like, it's like, oh, people... Oh, you, yeah. It's like, oh, you're wrong because we're all laughing at you now. But, yeah, it's him. Like, he's taking responsibility for, like, for the way he's been acting. And he, yeah, like you said, just goes and actually apologizes.
But I think also that because he learns their style, and he does seem to learn it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, they're only there for a day or two, which is questions. but... the fact that he learns it so quickly, he then kind of brings that into his fighting as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just his... it's not like just the end of Mulan, where all of the warriors dress as women to... I can't remember at the end of the Mulan. I just don't remember them dressing as women. But that was kind of like... this was an infiltration thing, so they just do that, but then they continue to do everything else the same way they did before.
Yeah.
This is Sokka taking on board what he's learned and making it part of himself.
Yeah.
And that's... you don't normally see that in a kid's show.
No, I know.
Like, yeah. You wouldn't expect any of this to come back and be a part of his character anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it, again, it shows that, like, with evolving his character, it's one, you know, pushing him forward in terms of the way he sees women. And taking, like, what's like maturing as well, but then also, like, so far we've seen him as a bit of a bumbling, not an idiot, but
not quite, like, a buffoon.
But you know, like, his fight against Zuko, like, he gets knocked around. And yes, that boomerang, that friggin' boomerang comes back, but he's not really a competent fighter. Like, in terms of what we've seen so far. But then in this, like you said, him picking up on this so quickly kind of shows as well, like, oh, no, he can... like, if he puts his mind to it, he can actually... like, he'll be able to stand his own against a lot of other people.
Yeah, it's that little bit of... that he does have the skills. He's only... he hasn't had the experience of fighting people. He's had the experience of training. And this feels like a level up or an explanation for his skills leveling up.
Yeah.
If we're using the D&D metaphor. Like, he's been at a certain level for a while. That's how he got his base skills. He trained with the warriors previously. But now it's like, well, I've learned a tripping maneuver. How the hell did I do that? Well, what if there's these other warriors that I learned to speak with, like, learn to talk to?
Yeah.
And we kind of see that, like, when Zuko does show up, like, Suki goes almost right up in his face and kicks him, and like nearly kicks him until the cool rhino lizard, like, smacks her around. But that's kind of the point, that these are good warriors, and Sokka kind of goes one-on-one with Zuko after that.
Yeah.
Not to win, but certainly to hold him off for a little bit. And it's like those different fighting styles coming together show that people without magic can take on someone who does have magic.
Yeah.
And that's a cool little element that it goes, okay, now we see a level playing field for someone who isn't a bender, who doesn't have those skills. It's like, okay, now it makes sense why the fighter's with all the wizards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. I liked it. And of course, if I'm going to be a shipper, just their last little moment of, you're more than a girl, you're just you're a warrior too. And she's like, I'm a warrior and a girl. Just FYI.
You're it's almost like, there. Dude. You're almost there, Sokka.
Yeah, you're almost there, but you're still so in. Like, she's so up for it with you. I don't understand why, but yeah. Oh, she's just, oh, he's kind of sweet and stupid.
Only a little bit sexist.
Yeah, only a little bit sexist. And he's growing. He learned to change really quickly. He's only been here a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that he was like, I'll learn the way you do. And he's got to wear the face paint and the dress. He's like, it's a bit girly, but then I'll learn.
Yeah.
It's like, do I have to? Okay. I do. Understood.
Yeah.
It's the only way. And everything explained to him, like, this means this and this, and the silk is the blood flowing through our veins. It's like, cool. I understand now.
Yeah, and he's actually like getting into it. Like he's like, yeah. I think yeah, in that scene, right? He's like starts to get a little bit like into the actual like the outfit as she explains it.
Yeah,
I think Aang walks past, doesn't he?
Yeah, Aang walks past and like, hey, nice dress. And yeah. He does it as like a little shit-eating grin because he's Aang. But he's also like, nice dress. Like, it could be a genuine compliment. This is part of one of the few things in the live-action show that I actually remember.
Because
mm-hmm. I know we've talked about it before, and I actually didn't mind it in the live-action show. I thought that they, like just the training montage with Sokka and Suki. I quite liked that. I liked their little, as a Sokka Suki shipper, mm-hmm. is it Suka? I don't know. Anyway, I liked their little moments together. I thought that was a good way of representing how they connect.
Can I say something possibly controversial?
Oh no, you hated it.
No, I think the live action show did it better. Not the whole episode. Fair. But their chemistry in the live action one, like in that training montage, I think they did it really well. I just, and again, that's one of the few things I remember. I'd never even finished the first season. I do need to finish watching it. But
do you think that's because they had more time
in the episode itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, I know it's funny, but they kiss in the live action one.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they do here.
No, she kisses him on the cheek.
Yeah, and they can up a little bit more of like that sexual tension a bit because it is more slightly mature. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not saying that the live action show did the Warriors and Kyoshi all together better. I'm just saying I did actually prefer their chemistry between the two of them in the live action version.
Yeah. It feels like that's what would be written now, I guess.
Yeah.
All of them. Because it does feel still a little bit that Saturday morning cartoon element of, oh, he's going to figure it out, but she's still kind of into him.
Yeah.
But it was, it made more sense in the live action one of why they'd be into each other.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Because they gave her more time. There was a couple scenes on her own, I think.
Yeah.
In the live action one, like her talking to her mum, which I don't think is a character in this. Is she?
No. We've got some old dude who's commanding the village.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, but so that's why. Like, I think like that's why it worked a bit better in the live action one. One of the few things I'm going to say that.
One of the few times. Well, I didn't watch any past these, so I'm done with them, I guess. Until I watch them. It makes more sense that there would be older women controlling, leading this village.
Yeah,
100%. If they have such worship for Kyoshi. Although they are repainting the Kyoshi statue. So it feels like while Aang was, like, after the Avatar kind of vanished for 100 years, they're a little bit like, well, fuck the Avatar. We're going to keep our traditions because we believe in it, but the Avatar aspect of that we don't care about as much.
Possibly. I think, like, I kind of, yeah, it is a bit of that, but I kind of, like, the way it read to me was just, like, again, they're so, like the Southern Water tribe, they're so focused on just survival in this world that like they don't have time to worry about if the statue's painted nice.
Yeah.
But then Aang comes along and like he tends to do, he gives people a lot of joy and hope and
hope. I just like saying hope lately.
I will say in terms like bring people joy, that shot where they cut to the crowd cheering him doing some airbending and that one guy is just losing his mind.
He's throbbing at the mouth. That's such a random gag. I love it.
I was watching it with my girlfriend, that episode actually, and she was like, "What?" Like, it just kind of like comes out of nowhere, but I find it so funny.
And it's, yeah, it's such a weird thing to be like, hey, this guy's so excited, he's just going to pass out and have like a fit or a seizure. But doesn't it, isn't it a recurring gag?
I'm not sure. I actually can't remember. Possibly. But I think
maybe
what makes
I've just
it...
seen this episode a lot, and every time I look up, it's that guy passing out.
What makes it funnier with that gag is the fact that it's the exact same thing that we've saw him do, I think, in the first episode, and then to Katara early in this episode, and that she doesn't care at all about. And it's just this simple little thing, and that I think it just makes it so funny cutting to this guy just losing it.
No, it's so cool. Because he's doing the thing where he's got the marbles and just spinning it between his fingers, between his hands. And Katara literally does not care. And he doesn't like, this crowd's amazing. And I love that later in the episode, the kids don't care again.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, check this out. I'm like, yeah, we've seen that. bring the Inagi out. But it's just a wacky episode. Like, there's some weird, it's wacky. Like, he's running around and getting chased by villagers and, like, got a weird, like, bendy arm thing when he's getting chased by the eel at the start.
Oh, my God. That, like, those, like, if anyone is watching this alongside, like, alongside this or just kind of casually watching through this show, go back to this episode and try to, like, go frame by frame in that bit where he's running from the Unagi, the big fish. It is so funny. The animation stills in that. His face, the weird bendy arms, the way he impacts into soccer. It's so funny.
Well, what I love is he jumps out of the water and he kind of does the little Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote, like running on air and then flies forward. And in a regular cartoon, you're like, yeah, that's what happens when you jump out of the water and you've got something chasing you. But he's an airbender. That is probably literally what happened.
Yeah, because like, while this is a cartoon, it does stay actually, it really stays grounded in its world pretty well and its rules. Like, they don't really bring out, I think I hear people online call it the Toon Force, which is like that, the thing that like Bugs Bunny's got where he can just like pull a hole out of nowhere and jump through it and summon things, and which a lot of cartoon characters do, but they kind of, they really don't do that in this show. But to have that cartoon visual thing of running on air, but it actually being canonically what would happen is great.
No, I thought that was a great little moment. And props for them for making it make sense. I'm wondering how, I just really have to come into D&D with that one. That was just fun. It's like, if he'd smashed through and left an Aang-shaped hole in the wall, that would have been great. It's just a fun, wacky episode. And even Zuko's a little bit wacky in it. Like, when it goes through all the people that hear about Aang being on Kyoshi, and it goes, like, through all these different people and the people bringing the fish to Zuko. Oh, no, wait, is it even then? Yeah, he finds out and he's like, we have to go! And Iroh's like, were you going to finish that fish? He's like, yes, I'm going to save it for later.
Yeah, he goes to walk off on it, and then even the opening gag of Zuko being like not being able to catch up to Aang and the group, the gang, I've heard people call it as well, that with two
gang with two A's,
not being able to catch up to them, and this whole thing of like, where are they? We can't, like, he's must be, what did I say again?
He's a tactical genius.
Yeah, he's a tactical genius.
Because we have no idea where he's going to go next. He's been all over the map.
And it turns out he's just, like, going wherever he feels like and playing with the marbles.
Yeah, and a little bit lost as well.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we know this place is near water. Oh, great. On an ocean planet. That's going to be hard to find.
That, by the way, that map, terrible map.
Oh, yeah.
The one he's holding is
scale. Zero scale. It's like hand draw. Anyway, speaking of water, I want to talk a little bit about the Unagi, and just that idea of when they show up and Aang surfing the koi.
Yeah,
And you get to see something in the water, like the idea of there's a monster, like a massive monster out in the ocean, and it's attacking the fish. And if you go out in the water, it'll attack you as well. That feels like a very D&D setup.
Yeah.
Like it's just this big monster out there. It's kind of blocking you from doing what you want to do. Go, hey, do you want to deal with it?
It's
And
funny though, because in terms of a D&D setup and a cartoon setup, it sets up like, oh, this is going to be the big thing. This
Yeah.
Unagi is causing problems for the village, and Aang needs to come in and save them from this serpent. And it's not even like it's kind of subverts your expectations, and it's not even what the episode's about.
Yeah. Well, this episode very much has the rule of three that I noticed. The rule of three being basically the three bears sort of thing. Like you have one extreme, then you have the other extreme, and then you have the solution. That's how I describe the rule of three anyway. And this has, let's look at the Unagi. In the first instant, well, actually, we have Aang being having Katara bored by the marble trick. And then we have people being excited by the marble trick. And then we have everyone being bored by the marble trick. So it's like there's the rule of three, the rule of comedy. And this has the Unagi. It's like they encounter the Unagi and it's scary. And then they encounter the Unagi again and it's still scary, but now he was expecting it and it still doesn't go well. And in the third one, he doesn't fight the Unagi, he works with the Unagi. And that is kind of what the message there is, that you don't fight against some things, you work to use them to your advantage. And it kind of comes into my another point that I wanted to do, which is kind of at the end of it, when he realizes with great power comes great responsibility, and we need to move on because Zuko is only here because I'm here. If we leave, Zuko leaves as well. And it's not about beating the crap out of Zuko and getting him to submit, it's about leaving so innocents don't get hurt. And having that opportunity, showing early on that you can't fight the Unagi, leads into the end where you go, okay, so don't fight the Unagi, don't fight Zuko, find some way to use one against the other, but also find some way to do it without combat.
And that can be
And
really, oh, sorry.
I was going to say, it's really good to have those clues early on, so that people start to think about them in your games as well. So to have that element of, hey, defeating that thing isn't the only option. Maybe you got some other clues out there too.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, 'cause the default for a lot of people is kill the thing, especially if it's big and scary looking. So it is good to try to incorporate some of those themes or plant those seeds of like, hey, you don't have to fight this thing. Like, you can. There's other ways to do this.
And particularly with the Unagi, that's so incredibly powerful. Like, what? How are they going to fight it? Do they need to even fight it, or is it just there? Yeah, it's some interesting stuff in that one. But I guess it's not really a metaphor for Zuko, is it? But it lays that groundwork for maybe you don't have to beat people up all the time. I don't know. I don't know. There's so much going on. It's so wacky. I don't understand. This
It
episode's
is
a tough
really
one.
wacky.
Oh, it's so wacky. That's just there's stuff. It just again, it's that tone element that we keep going on about. It's the super lighthearted stuff, and then as soon as Zuko arrives, there is a shift, not just in like the style, in the tone of the story, but the color tone of the
Literally
animation.
that they use the with the fire and stuff, like it all gets this like orangey red tone that goes over everything.
Yeah, which, oh, so creepy.
Oh, it's so effective.
It just has this, it always reminds me of, well, maybe this is just something that Australians can relate to more, but when there's a bushfire not too far away, but there's smoke covering the sun, and you just get that real haze and orange look to it, and it feels like the apocalypse, really. And I think they captured that perfectly with this.
Yeah.
And then just,
I was going to say, and then even with the wackier parts of the episode being like, you know, you've got this way of ending the episode with this, like you said, apocalypse-esque feeling and burning villages and this great power, great responsibility lesson. But throughout the episode, like, the biggest thing on Aang's mind is just that he wants Katara's attention.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it, really? Like, yes, the Unagi's there, but there is this jealousy thing from Katara and this... I guess like the first hint at possible feelings between the two of them.
It's all about the feelings.
They're feels. Yeah, but it's just like, I think that works really well because it's such this wacky episode where they're just worried about their own little relationships, but then it ends with a raid of a village.
Whoa. And it, Zuko just smashing through people.
Yeah.
And again, there's that moment when Aang comes to confront him because the Unagi like beats the crap out of him, then Katara heals him, and then as the Kyoshi warriors are fighting Zuko, but he's doing like he's beating them up. He's a master at what he does. And Aang comes along and he's been using his staff to like block everything, and he grabs the fans that the Kyoshi warriors use to attack.
Yeah.
And he kind of does this move and knocks Zuko through a wall. And he has this moment of kind of looking around of like, oh, I don't like violence.
Yeah.
Like that moment of, oh, that doesn't feel good. And that's when he kind of jumps on his stick again, his flying stick, and runs again.
Yeah.
So,
it's
yeah.
Like it's this little sad look that he does and then leaves. It's, yeah.
It's this heavy, heavy moment for a kid who up until this point in the episode has just been like, I want the girl to notice me.
Yeah.
And I like having all the other girls look at me. Mostly. It's, yeah, this is it's a good episode for being such a weird one.
It is.
I feel like if you want to know what Avatar is like, if you want to get a good idea, like if you're going to play the Avatar Legends game, and you want to get a basic idea of what are the themes that they're trying to talk about, what is the adventures you're going to see, just watch this episode.
Yeah, it is a good like representation of the show itself, isn't it?
Yeah. For episode 4 of the series, it's a great one to just easily ease people into it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's an interesting idea. Do you reckon you could do it as a an introductory session? Like, would this make an introductory session for an RPG?
So the group's already together.
Yeah, the group's already together. You've got this thing of like, hey, you're getting all your wacky stuff out of the way, but at the end there's going to be a villain who shows up.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like... Yeah, I think like it allows the players to like get a feeling of like they can get up to whatever antics they want to. There is something that they can try to work towards, like figuring out with the Unagi if they want to. But you're still going to have your typical big fight, big villain. And depending on their choices, you kind of give them the idea of consequence as well.
Yeah, I think it strikes that right tone of theme, right tone of introducing all the different elements that you need. It's got the little bit of combat, it's got all the role play stuff, it's got the world building. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that. I just wanted to kind of point it out. And I don't have that many other notes, honestly, for this one.
Neither do I.
Like, it's, I love the Unagi as a monster.
Yeah.
Like, the way it's introduced, the way it's it's a threat to them, but not a one that is hunting them. Yeah. It's just kind of there. Like, it goes after the koi, and that's a problem. And then it kind of goes after Aang because he's in his way. And then it's like, all right, I'm done now. See ya.
I've got a question for you. Just in terms of the world, what is the Unagi or the Koi? Because most of the animals here are a mix between two.
They did say it's elephant koi.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that. All right. So the koi are big because they're part elephant.
Yeah.
I wish they had more elephant features and they weren't just big. That would have been funny.
Yeah, they've got like big, big ears or like flippers that look like elephant ears. Or even just some tusks. That'd be cool. Yeah,
I'd love a koi fish with a massive nose.
This huge trunk that flops down as they jump out of the water. Oh, all right, but the Unagi, well, it's some sort of eel.
Is it like an eel mixed with like a catfish?
I guess so. Like, it is, Unagi is eel. Like, that's the word for eel. But I feel like it's got I think eels do have those little whiskers.
Oh, no, I think you're right.
So it's just big eel.
Well, I guess maybe mystical-esque creatures don't count. I guess in terms of the composite creature thing that they got going.
Yeah. But I don't know if eels have that fin down the back that it does.
Mm.
I don't know enough about eels, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not an eel guy, sorry.
Eels are creepy, all right? I'm going to say it now. I'm going to take a controversial stand and say eels are creepy.
No, 100%.
I've been creeped out of them since Sign of the Seahorse. like showing my age again. But yeah, they're just snakes, but in the water. And that's not acceptable to me.
No. This is an anti-eel podcast, actually.
Yes, we're taking the stand now.
Yeah.
fuck the Unagi. Don't fuck the Unagi. That's creepy. No, as I said, Unagi, not a sex thing. That's going to be the t-shirt from now on. Once we get some merch going. Unagi, not a sex thing. That's just, I don't want that to be my legacy. I'm trying to think of a D&D monster that the Unagi would be comparable to. Like, they don't really have sea serpent. Maybe a kraken?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, a kraken's tentacle.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you don't have the whole thing because it would just destroy the party, but you have just this, like, the creature itself is just offshore and it just like whips its tentacle out. Okay, I can't stop saying these things today. It's whipping out tentacles and yeah. It's fucking Unagis. So, I don't like it. There's too much of it. I don't have much more to say about this one, honestly. I love the way they bicker. It's like, I'm glad that you're going to do that. Yeah, I hope you die. Okay, great. I'll do that then. when Aang's going to go and swim with the Unagi. So that's a fun little moment. That's just nice, fun role-playing with them. Yeah. Wondering now if Suki was introduced. Like, let's, again, imagine this is an RPG group. If they introduce Suki to have Zuko's player be like, hey, so if you're not gonna join them, do you want to play, like, a different character? Like, oh, we'll create like a character that's got a connection with Sokka, is like a cool fighter, and maybe you want to like join in there. And Zuko's like, nah. I like this fire dude. I'm gonna stick with him. It's like, okay, let's get you to where they are then, and you can like see how they're joining things, and they can catch them. Like, no, I'm too good for that. I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna fight them and beat them, but then they'll continue chasing. That's how I work.
Yeah, the DM last episode had I could do one session with having you guys completely separate. I can't do this again. I'm pushing you together. And then they still didn't go together.
Yeah, it's constant. Like, whoever's playing Zuko keeps coming up with these great ideas of how he would play his character. Like, I don't know, a lizard, can't I like whip with the tail so I don't get captured? It's like, yes. Yes, you can do that. Roll for it. Okay, 20? Great. Great. This is really good for me. Really glad I made you make this character. it's the only possible thing. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure. What's the next episode we're looking at? King of Omashu. I don't know if this one's got Zuko.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It must. I can't remember.
They're all got Zuko. It's Zuko. I keep saying Zuko. I keep thinking, and when I say it like that, I assume it's Danny Zuko from Greece. Like a lot of times, it's like no, Zuko, Prince Zuko of the Fire Nation. This time, it's like, hey, it's Zuko. Oh. I think we're going to wrap it up there, even if this is a little bit shorter than the usual episodes, because we're just padding for time, really. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week when we are going to talk about the King of Omashu. Is it Omashu or Omashu?
Omashu, I think.
Omashu, okay. This is another great episode. Yeah. You can subscribe wherever podcasts are found and whatever podcatcher you are using. And you can leave ratings and reviews in the app and get us out to more listeners, or you can just tell friends, which would really appreciate, hearing about this. Cause I don't know if you know this, but people fucking love Avatar: The Last Airbender. Yeah. And people love role-playing games. So if you combine them, you get Avatar Legends, but you also get us talking about it.
Yeah.
And you can find out, you can hear more of us talking about things elsewhere, but you can come and send us questions at the email address, which is dndntvpod@gmail.com, or come and talk to me on Instagram, which is at dndntvpod, or my personal Instagram, which is at talumin83, that's talumin83. I'm going to just stay in Talumin and assuming everyone knows what it means now. Because if you go to Blue Sky, I'm the same username over there. I've claimed the Talumin username pretty much everywhere now because I'm pretty certain I made the word up. And generally, either it's going to be me or someone copying being me, which I have found before. So,
Okay.
If you were copying me, that wasn't cool. No, Danny, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at danny.calamari. Other than that, I'm doing things here and there, but nothing in particular to talk about at the moment.
No doubt you'll put links and stuff up on your Instagram if you're doing stuff.
Yeah.
You can also find us on Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service in Melbourne, where we run games at Fortress Emporium in the city every... What do you call the word? Every Sunday. It's a Sunday.
Sunday, yeah, that's the word. Things.
For Dungeons and Flagons, which is really fun. Gets you a drink, gets you a three-hour session for adventurers, for beginner adventurers or for intermediate ones. And there's other sessions and other adventures that go on. So you can go to mastersofalchemy.au to find out more about that. Covered off pretty much everything. I can't remember if we've got anything coming up in April. Probably going to be at those conventions. What are going on then? Master of Alchemy normally does some Supernova. That's the one that's in April. This may even be coming out around Supernova. There's probably going to be a panel. You should come along and listen to that. It'll be very interesting. It always is. It's probably going to be about running your first session, if I know what's going on, because I pay attention in the group emails. Boss, if you're listening, I know stuff. So I'm going to wrap up now before I get in more trouble. Stay safe, be kind to yourselves. May all your hits be crits.
Yep.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.